Blog Talk Radio.
We never spend time talking to you, so we figured we'd lay it on you, let you know how we feel about love.
Paint a pretty smile each day. Loving is a blessing, yeah. Never let it fade away. It's all about love, yeah. Feel yourself a true romance. Beauty that's around you, yeah. You deserve just one more chance, my dear, my dear. Let the light shine all through your life. Fill your little heart aglow. Take the time, make up your mind. It's all about love, yeah. Talking to yourself is fine. Makes you feel much better. Know just where to draw the line, girl, my dear, girl, my dear, oh, God.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Nation Building Movement. It is so good to be here this evening with all of you. It's been a long week, but it's been good to get back to this place. We have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful broadcast for everyone this evening, and we are talking about DOSFER ESJ and the global initiative of the Just Third Way. And I am so honored to have such a distinguished panel with us this evening. And we have Dr. E.B. Uma, who is from, who is of the Biafra people. And I'll let him explain more about that to you. And hopefully in a few minutes we will also be joined by State Senator Karen Gaston from Bridgeport, Connecticut. So they have a lot of information to share with us this evening. It's going to be a very interesting show. So I want to bring on now my illustrious co-host, of course, Brother Gene Gordon. But before I do that, I just want to say that I'm so honored to have, excuse me, Dr. Uma on, because he is a native from my grandmother's country. My grandmother,
wow,
Ngozi Chukwu is of the Igbo tribe. So it is just so good to have a brother from the native land on. So, Dr. Uma, thank you for gracing us with your presence. All right, Brother Gene, take it away.
Yes, good evening, everybody. As he said, it's an honor and privilege for our distinguished guests to take some time out and spend with us. I want to also give an acknowledgement to Carolyn Nall, who's called in from Bridgeport, Connecticut. She is served as the NAACP president of Bridgeport for 16 years. She's a strong community activist, a hunger for righteousness and justice. She served as administrator and advisor and nominated Heron Gaskin of Bridgeport, Connecticut to state senate. And for my understanding, Mr. Gaston is 34 years old, so we're getting some young people there in the office, and hope that he can get some good things going down there in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I don't know if Mr. Gaskin is on the line. Is he on the line yet? And Mr. Gaskin, can you let us know if you're joined us yet? I guess not. He has. He said he would join us. So we're gonna just move on into the show. Carolyn Nall, can you just share with us quickly before we go to our special guest, Dr. Uma? Can you just share with us a little about what you're wanting to do there in Bridgeport, Connecticut, in reference to the new economic paradigm and the Just Third Way?
Well, I like to try to educate the community as to what the paradigm is all about. One of the things that caught my ear when I began to talk to Dr. Curlin, he said that it was a way to lift people out of poverty. And the legislation that you put together out in Missouri was very intriguing for me. And I believe that anything is possible if you only believe and you work towards it. So I'm very interested in the Just Third Way. I'm trying to get more education for myself because everything was very new to me up until about 3 or 4 months ago. So I've been constantly reading and researching. So I'm very interested in the way it's going to go. So that's where I am right now.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. Dr. Uma, how are you today?
I am doing very well, Gene, and a shout-out to the Queen herself. I'm really thrilled about your heritage.
Ndubu, brother, Ndubu, thank you.
Thank you, too. And let me thank you, Gene, and also thank everyone that is listening, that's tuning in and listening in today's important broadcast.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, Dr. Uma, first of all, I want you to just give the listening audience just a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and a little bit about Biafran government in exile, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Certainly. Thank you. Well, as the moderator says, my name is Black Uma. I have been living in the United States now for more than 5 years. After escaping the pit of hell that is known as Nigeria, I started my education in North Carolina, where I obtained my first degree in industrial technology. I am originally from the Igbo ethnicity. The word actually Igbo actually is a corruption name for the word Hebrew, as they sojourned to a new land. Due to punishment of disobedience. For those of you familiar with the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, you may be able to read more about this story. The Igbo ethnicity is presently found in the area of Bight of Biafra, which is a part of the West African coast of Atlantic Ocean. The nation of Biafra was before the adventurers of the Europeans. Actually, the Portuguese were the first to land in Biafra land and traded with the Biafran people before the arrival of the British. The 1894-95 Berlin Conference by the Europeans as a major factor of African problems today as we know it. The Europeans literally shared the continent of Africa amongst themselves. Of course, for the several reasons of exploitation, including open hostility of the African people. The people of Biafra were forcefully merged with other independent ethnicities for today it became known as Nigeria. The forced mergers by Britain in 1914 was supposed to be a 100-year project. That Nigeria project actually, this Nigeria project that we are talking about actually expired in 2014. Technically,
Wow. There
should not be anything called Nigeria today. The forced different nations should be enjoying their separate freedoms now in that enclave. Now, in 1966, when thousands of our people were slaughtered in the northern part of the country by the rest of Nigeria, we decided to relocate to our homeland in the eastern part of the country. Unfortunately, Nigeria and their backers were not satisfied with the blood already wasted. They came again to our enclave to kill us off. We then rose and defended ourselves on an event they call the Nigerian Civil War, 1967-70, an event we actually say it was called truly a genocidal war as opposed to a Nigerian Civil War. And here we are today, still asking for our freedom from a country that already expired. We have been calling for a peaceful separation from Nigeria, talking to dissenting ears to listen to us so that we may avoid another war that is actually in the air coming. So in November 12, 2022, we reopened a Republic of Biafra government in exile here in the Washington, D.C. area, telling our stories to all who care and asking the whole world to hear our calls. You may reach our office at 202-250-0001 or our website at republicofbiafra.org. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get that later on in the show so we can make copy of that. So, but you're saying that Nigeria was a 100-year project and it expired in 2014. Am I correct?
You certainly, that's true. It was a 100-year experiment by Britain, and just as you have Hong Kong, remember what happened in Hong Kong? It was also a limited time assigned with Britain to Hong Kong in terms of how many years they will lay the siege on Hong Kong. When that year reached, they released Hong Kong back to China, even though, as we speak, Hong Kong is more westernized and have been stubborn to work with the Chinese people. So the same experiment was signed by Britain now, not with the natives, not with the ethnicities that were merged to become one country of Nigeria. But for one reason, they agreed this experiment of one Nigeria was supposed to be for 100 years. Day after, if those ethnicities are not able to continue to live together, then they are free to go their separate ways. Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. And something I want to say, you know, back in, you know, in Europe, you know, they had different tribes. You had the Angles, the Saxons, the Goths, and Visigoths. But these tribes came together and they formed nations. So today you hear no mention of tribal names. You hear England, Germany, Spain, and France. But, you know, they're on the African continent where you have the boundaries of a nation. You have more people paying closer, more attention to their tribes than their nations. So there, would you say there is a much of vision there among, you know, the different tribes there in the continent of Africa, you know, and that is pretty much what, you know, what keeps us divided. You know, here in America, you know, we have different tribes, but it's not, you know, tribal names. You know, we divide ourselves among religion and name and therefore, you know, different, you know, gangs and stuff like that, but we have divided ourselves among tribes. And even when you go among the Native Americans, they have, you know, different tribes. So what can we do? Is there that demonstrates to me really that there is a knowledge missing. Something is missing that will bring the tribes together into, you know, family. Do you see that happening? I mean, what can be done to bring us together and to become one family and one nation? I mean, what can be done? Is there anything that you think can be done, or do you see that happening in the future?
No. Okay, thank you. You've drawn examples from both Europe and also here in the United States. Let us just go back to the European nations, you know. You mentioned Germany, you mentioned France and all those states. Well, bear in mind, the different ethnicities that make up Germany all agreed to be called the German people. The same scenario is what you see in France, in Britain. Britain, you have five different northern, southern islands, and you have the Wales and England and then Scotland. They agreed to be called Great Britain. And the same thing, and you recall in France, there was a problem they had with one particular ethnicity called Belgium that resulted in their going their separate ways. Now, contrast that with what happened in Africa. Again, we are going to get into the 1894-95 Berlin Conference, where literally the Europeans shared the continent of Africa. And I'm submitting to you, when that happened, this European, for example, the Britain received the share of Nigeria, the area called Nigeria today. When Britain came on board, for their own selfish reasons, there was nothing like calling the natives together to say, hey, look, let's do this, and we want you guys to live in harmony. Such thing never happened again as it happened in Europe. Rather, out of arrogance, out of sheer hatred, and all kinds of reasons, this British people, not only the British people, even the France did the same thing. They literally bundled all these ethnicities together and give them a name, you know. So the disharmony and the rancor and all kinds of problems have never ceased among these different nations they brought together forcefully without their consent. So this is the problem, and this is the difference between you citing European nations and here, even here in the United States. Thank you.
All right, well, Dr. Yuma, I have a question, if you don't mind. I have two questions, actually. My first question to you is, why do you see the need for separation from Nigeria?
Why do I see the need? There is a very need for a relationship that is not working, that has not worked for the past 100 years. Why are you in a relationship that does not work? Is being in a marriage by force? Even a couple, when it doesn't go well for them anymore, they have to separate for peace sake. So there is no compatibility between this or among these ethnicities. They were forcefully, and I need you to understand the difference. These people, these different nations, were forcefully put together by Britain. These different nations were already empires that thrived before the arrival of the Europeans. And then somebody's just going to walk inside one day and say, hey, Germany and Britain and France, hey, we're going to call you Nigeria. You know that is impossible. You cannot make Germany and France and Britain to be one country. It's not going to happen. That is the reality of things. Because in these African areas and countries, those nations that already tried before the arrival of the Europeans, you know, were empires again. They were independent nations before. So that one single reason is the reason why nothing has worked. I know people always ask, what is wrong with Africa? What is wrong with Africa? Why can't they get along? Why can't they get along? How can they get along when they had no agreement to be together in the first place? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that answer. And I have one question, you know, because, you know, having heritage from that region of Africa, I have two heritages, which my father is from Kasarani, which is right outside of Nairobi, and then my grandmother, who is Igbo from, you know, Nigeria. And I guess historically, I think we never understood, or it was never taught to us, how the big invasion actually began. Because when you look at the continent of Africa and then you see the invasion from other countries that become the deciding strong arm, so to speak, of the economic system as well as the social system of Africa. Can you give us the history of how all of that may have began, because that is the part in our education when our families who say we have the history of our family, nobody can explain to me the invasion.
Okay, thank you very much, Queen. I appreciate that. The answer is very simple. And I need you, after my explanation, to Google Berlin Conference. Berlin is the, as you know, it's in Germany. Berlin Conference of Europeans, 1894-95, the Berlin Conference of Europeans. On that conference was where the European people, and I'm saying a lot of them, sat together in a round table and literally, and I'm saying it again, shared the continent of Africa among themselves. Now, when this sharing was going on, there was no particular demarcation as to, okay, we're going to have here, we're going to have here, even though they used maps during that sharing. The actual thing that happened was when these people arrived in Africa. Again, like I said in the beginning, the Portuguese were the first people that arrived in the west coast of Biafra, right? You know, the Bight of Biafra. And as the Biafra nation was already in progress, was already a nation, was already an empire, we traded with them. We traded with them with palm oil, with cocoa, with kola nuts, with all kinds of crops. But then, after that Berlin Conference of 1894-95, that area, the whole of that area, became the property of Britain. And so that's when everything changed. So Britain literally walked into the area, and looking at all these empires, you had the Biafran Empire, you had the Benin Empire, you had the Kanuri Empire, you had other empires, the Oyo Empire. All these people became what you know today as Nigeria. They were not secretaries to this major. So this is the genesis of the problem we have, not only in Nigeria, but in other African countries. The countries you have in Africa, them, many of them did not, as Jean cited, with examples of European and United States, they never had any agreement whatsoever to become one country.
Wow. And so, therefore, as much as we are a divided country on this soil, we are also a divided country in Africa.
In Africa,
That is unfortunate. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
For the fact that, thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that history, because we need to know that.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Well, Brother G, do you have another question?
Dr. Umar, I just thought it was important to lay down the history of Biafran and the African continent and Nigeria. Now I want to ask you a question. You've heard of the and looked at the Just Third Way and a New Paradigm. Just give me your thoughts on the Just Third Way, and your thoughts on introducing the Just Third Way to, the Biafran people, and are you at all worried about resistance and possibility, violence? Because it takes a lot of courage to, you got to be courageous, and to be introducing a new paradigm, which, I think here in America, I tell Norm and Queen and all those who are part of the DOS organization that we have taken on one of the most, hardest jobs, and that is to educate and change the minds of the people when it comes to, economics and economic democracy. So just give us your thoughts on the Just Third Way and the new economic paradigm, and if at all, do you plan to introduce that to the Biafran people?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Gene. I came to know and admire this original concept by the late lawyer and economist, Louis Kelso, through another attorney by the name Norman Curran. Kelso introduced a socio-economic system that harmonizes mankind with factors of production by advocating that even the office cleaner can be part owner of the same corporation that she or he works for. I strongly believe that the global market needs to pay attention to this provocative new concept, though it has been around since the last century. Let me also give credit to Attorney Norman G. Curran, the co-founder and president of Economic and Justice, Social Justice, for working assiduously in promoting this concept to discerning ears all over the world. And I think that has been on since 1984. Let me also give credit to the whole group at the Center for Economic and Social Justice here in the Washington, D.C. area, Don, Mike, Ronald, and so many of them that have been working very hard to make use of this new concept a reality that anybody can emulate in this modern society. Now, let me simply bring in my perspective on this bright concept. Of course, Biafra is not here yet, but what a wonderful idea to start our regained freedom, where each citizen will enjoy a complete sense of belonging, meaning capital ownership. Now, the present economic system is likened to the medical community, that is the doctors, prescribing medications for treatment of illnesses and never for cure. Meaning the medical doctors are doing the bidding of the drug manufacturing industry, who in all sense of the world have the capabilities of curing many of these diseases plaguing humankind. Now, that knocking down on any system, because every system has its merits and demerits. I submit to you that for a very long time, the Fed, the state, the local, and all those things have been addressing, have been dressing these wounds that never healed. There's got to be another way out. This is where the just third world comes to play. A blended harmony of each of the prevailing systems to reduce to the highest level poverty among the citizens. I would like to see a new Biafran nation where has a sense of worth, both property and capital. Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome, Dr. Umar. And let me just elaborate on what you were saying is that the Just Third Way and the Economic Democracy Act and the Citizen Land Development Co-op, which is a component within the Economic Democracy Act, is, I believe, is not impossible. It has been done, but it was done through employees with the ESOP, Employee Stock Ownership Plan, that Dr. Curlin, you know, he's on the line. Let me give a shout-out to Dr. Curlin and the CESJ team. I see they're on the line. But it has been done, but it was done in a way for, you know, for employees, ESOP companies. But this is a way that it can be done for all citizens. And it's addressing, you know, when we talk, and I tell people all the time, poverty is not an individual problem. It is a collective problem. Racism is not an individual problem. It is a collective problem. When you talk about institutional racism, it's not an individual problem. So it's imperative that we come together collectively with a collective approach and a collective solution to solve this problem. You know, let me just ask you a question. You know, with the suffering and the struggle of the people of Biafra and on the continent of Africa, how would you, is there any similarities to what, not just particularly the descendants of American slaves here in America. You talked about the genocide, and for as I know, there was over 3.5 million people killed. You know, that's outright genocide. And that is, would you say that that's similar to what happened to the Native American, the Native people here in America when their land was stolen? And is there any many similarities to the struggle of the people of Biafran and the on the continent of Africa, and the struggle of the descendants of American slaves here in America. And, you know, what are the similarities? Is the struggle the same?
Yes, of course. There are similarities. The people of Biafra and the descendants of American slaves, otherwise known as BAS, here in America, are both indigenous people struggling for survival up to this moment. They both have been ignored for way too long. They both have been exploited because of the regional resources in their lands. Their lands have been confiscated by foreigners who were last to arrive in their shores. In the Bight of Biafra, where they settled right now along the coast of Atlantic Ocean, their new tormentors, the Fulani, want to kill them all off. As we speak, they have invited their kinsmen from all over Africa to come and fight to settle in Biafra land permanently. Fulani from Mali, Libya, Senegal, Gabon, Somalia, Kenya, and other African countries have now infiltrated the forests of Biafra, waiting for the D-Day to come. Yes, there are many similarities compared to what is at stake today. Thank you.
Okay. I want to give the listening audience an opportunity to ask questions. If you have any, please press your dial pad and I'll see your hand come up. Also, if you, I have everybody mics open because sometimes it takes a little longer to make the mics live. So if you have noise in your background, just put your own phone on mute. And when you're ready to speak, just press one on your dial pad and I'll answer you. I mean, just what you said, it's so intriguing to me because having there in Africa and not really knowing, you know, our people, it's just so strange to me that almost the same identical, for the lack of a better expression, culprit has decided to obtain the wealth of the world, so to speak. And I say the wealth, I do mean not only just the oil and the gold and the minerals, but to invade the land and invade the policies under which people live. I'm trying to see, in your opinion, what would be the motivating force for people, especially indigenous people, to stand up and stake a claim in their native lands just as the invaders have staked claims on foreign soil that's foreign to them. I mean, because the more you speak, the more the world comes together in my mind, and it makes no sense. And I think that, in my opinion, that the solution would be that we, as people who have been violated, would have to someday stand up and call an end to the invasion of not only land and resources, but of policies. I just want your opinion on that. And if anybody has a question, raise your hand, please. Press one.
Thank you, Quinn. Wow. Like I said in the beginning, we, the Biafran people, we have been crying our hearts out to all descending ears who will listen to our story, because the Biafran people are very peaceful-oriented people. We are naturally Republicans in nature, meaning we love to explore. We love to go at any length to get to what we want in life. So we are not worldly people, always ready to kill to obtain what we want. Let's go back to the European invasions of Africa. Well, Africa, to travel by sea from Europe to Africa is quite a long distance. But people were ready to build some big boats, to enter these boats, to go to a long distance looking for treasuries, looking for minerals, looking for things that they can bring back home. And, of course, this is the beginning of the so many ills that became what you know today as both the slavery and other stuff. And now let's go back to Biafra again. In 1967-70 war, we had with Nigeria, and actually our people were killed in thousands, and that led to us declaring the state of Biafra. Now, remember, Biafra already existed before the advance of the Europeans in that area. And so when we felt that our people were slaughtered in the thousands and even the perpetrators were not even remorseful about what they did to us, so we decided, okay, already this relationship they forced us into is not even working. So what they said, it's time for us to go so that we can have the freedom, the separation that we need to compete with the rest of the world. And so it happened. You are not going to hear any of these things in the media, not in CNN, not anywhere. As a matter of fact, during that 1967-70 war of genocide against our people, the whole world looked the other way. They were not interested. They didn't. So they literally stood by where our people were slaughtered. United Nations couldn't do anything. Why? Because they said, hey, look, it's a domestic problem with one of our permanent allies, which is Britain. It's a domestic problem. Britain should be able to handle that problem. And so all our cries during that period did not go anywhere. So this is what you see in many of the situations, both in Africa and elsewhere, all over the world. Thank you.
Yeah, that. So what you're saying is before the European invasion and before that they created Nigeria, which was a 100-year project, you're saying that Biafran was, before all of that, that was always Biafran.
Yes, sir. That's exactly what I'm saying. And ladies and gentlemen, everyone that tune in, you have your computer, your laptop, all you have to do is Google Biafra. Just Google it, Biafra. You can Google Biafra in 1500, Google Biafra in 1600, or even early 1900. If you Google Biafra, you see all these things that I'm talking about. This is a place, it was a nation, it was an empire that was already in existence before the arrival of the Europeans. Thank you.
Wow.
I see where it said that it exists, it ceased to exist as an independent nation beginning in 1970. And I'm saying this is like recent stuff that's going on in our country, and we're not aware, or we're not made aware, or there doesn't seem to be enough information to spark an interest. There has to be better lines of communication between those of us here in America that know, which is almost every African-American, know that you have some heritage there. And so there's an interest that should be there as much as it should be here. And I think that people don't understand that at the brink of all of this and the cause of all of this war and death is economics.
Yes,
it's
ma'am.
Power. It's
yes,
greed.
Ma'am.
And it's
yes,
sad
ma'am.
That
yes,
we
ma'am.
Call ourselves the most intelligent being on the earth. And this is what we do to one another. I'm just so enlightened by everything, you know, that you shared, Dr. Uma. It's very interesting, and I just appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you, Quinn.
Does anyone have a...
I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. No, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. What you see that way saying it ceases to exist in 1970 is the end of that genocidal war, otherwise known as civil war. The war was for 3 years, 1967 to 1970. That's what you see. But remember, I even told you to Google Biafra of 1500, 1600, 1900. You will see the map where Biafra was before the arrival of the Europeans. So Biafra was before the arrival of the Europeans. And we reintroduced Biafra in 1967-70, but it was a short-lived republic once again because of the killing of more than 3.5 million of our people. We were literally attacked by the whole world, including Soviet Union. And what was the reason? Because they thought Biafran people have the resources they need for whatever they need. And of course, they've been stealing those resources up to date, up to now that I'm talking to you. Those are all realities. And the another reason why you cannot hear anything about Biafra genocide is because right after that war, Britain did all the coup to make sure the word Biafra was not mentioned anywhere. Matter of fact, if you go to the map of the coast, west coast of Africa right now, where we are situated, they changed the Bight of Biafra to Bight of Benin. But you will still see Bight of Biafra if you Google the Biafra 1500, 1600 map and places and areas. Thank you.
Okay, I have one more question, because I don't want to take up a whole lot of time individually. But I want to ask you, how important do you feel about the Native people becoming aware of the Just Third Way and the Citizen Land Development Cooperative? How effective would that actually be in the nation of Biafra?
Okay, you are asking me the what the relationship will be between the Native Americans?
I want to know how would the people of Biafra, in particularly, mm-hmm. benefit from the Just Third Way and the Citizen Land Development Cooperative? Like, how would that help that you know, that region of people?
Okay. In terms of Biafra, we already have the land. We already have the land, even though right now they're trying to permanently kill all of us and take over our land. You know, we already have our land in contrast to the Native Americans who are still struggling to have their own land. And again, I am excited that the state of Missouri recently passed a law to that effect. Yeah, well, on that note, we, like I told the proponents of this Just Third Way, Biafra will be an easy experiment of this new concept. Because, again, we are Republican in nature. We love to learn. We love to especially learn new concepts, new things. And if you come to Biafra and tell the people, hey, look, there are so many rich, or there are few rich people, but there are so many people living in poverty. What can we do? I will show you a concept that if you follow, you will literally eliminate many of the poverty-stricken people in your enclave, in your country. I am telling you that, and as a private person that have started this new concept, I am telling you you will be an easy sell. In my place, it will be an easy sell. And I also believe the Native Americans, it will also be an easy sell. Like Gene already mentioned, this is concept is not really new, except that the arrogance of the so-called people, so-called people at the head will not really lower their ego to look at these bright ideas that can eliminate a lot of poverty around the globe. It's a very simple concept, a harmonized concept with blending from the existing ones, and we are not advocating. Nobody's trying to get rid of, other economic systems in place. But we are saying that the cleaner, the office cleaner, is not going to be sad or not going to be envious of the CEO of the company when she sees the CEO driving a $200,000 vehicle. She's going to say, oh, yeah, after all, she's the CEO. She can drive a $200,000 vehicle. But I am also an owner of this company. You see? That builds a lot of heart in that company and across the place. So I'm hoping Native Americans, through education, using technocrats, that they will really, really educate the people to understand this concept. I'm convinced something that they can actually implement fully to their own benefit. Thank you.
Yeah, and Dr. Umar, you answered a question that I had for you. You already answered it, but you mentioned something, a new idea. I mean, a new concept, new ideas. And what we're looking for is we have to become independent thinkers, we're living in a world of evolution. Everything is evolving. So we have to come with new approaches, new ideas, and new concepts. But like you say, we have to, as leaders, put our egos aside, and I experienced that here in St. Louis. You know, when I introduced this new idea to quote-unquote leaders here in the city, they're so stuck on egos to the fact that they won't look at, they pretty much don't look at new ideas because of egos. It sounds good. I never heard of it, but I didn't come up with the idea, so I'm not going to support it. All that has to be, eliminated. But you said something else, is that, you do have a nonviolent, justice-based strategy for independence for Biafran. Knowing that, I mean, you have a justice-based strategy. Knowing that you have a concept or an idea which would turn everybody into an owner, my question to you is, when Biafra achieves its independence, who will own the natural resources of that new nation?
Oh, wow. That's an easy question. The Biafrans. Biafrans are the ones that are going to own their resources. Yes.
They already own it.
It might interest you to know presently that more than 80% of the oil wealth in Nigeria are private. This is a thing never heard of across the globe. This is not
you say 80% is private?
So this oil people, these oilies and their supporters are the reason they are ready to die for Nigeria. Of course, the vulnerable ones in the society are the ones that the oilies use as pawns. The international oil companies equally steal as they please. But when Biafra comes, the stealing will stop because the oil wells, the resources, the gold, the diamonds, all the natural resources that are found in Biafra land will now go back to the owners of the land, which is the people. And that's what our tormentors are afraid of. They are not ready to lay their hands off the billions of dollars of stealing our resources that have become norm in their mind. Thank you.
Okay, in voicing your support for the third way and the universal citizen access to money, power, and capital ownership, how do you think these ideas could fit into your strategy? How can they fit into your strategy for the Biafran independence?
I'm sorry. Rephrase that. Say that question again, please.
In voicing your support for the Just Third Way and universal citizen access to money, power, and capital ownership, how do you think these ideas can fit into your strategy for Biafran's independence?
Okay. Again, it's all about education. Education meaning showing the indices that make up the strategies of the third world. You need education. You have to educate the people. You have to introduce the modality that works or that you feel will work for this new concept. Again, I'm using the word new concept because even though this thing has been around for a while, since last century, but to many people, especially in the third world countries, these are new things that they have even never heard of. So I am really excited that let the new Biafra nation come back and let us educate the Biafran people about this concept. We have too many people all over the world that are suffering when they are not supposed to be suffering. Because guess what? God equally gave everyone, every sector of the universe, things that they have cooperative advantage at. In every land, they always have something that they can use, you know, to bargain for something that they don't have. The problem again, is the privileged few that continuously take advantage of the majority. There got to be a way that we can use to neutralize that arrogance and greedy way of life. It can be done. These people can still be rich, but it can still be done in such a way that the number of people in poverty can be reduced to the barest minimum. It's very possible. And like I said again, I would like to apply this concept by teaching our people the advantages of using this Just Third Way for the benefit of our people. Thank you.
Okay, I want to see if Tergaston is on the line. If you're on the line, Senator Gaston, please let us know. Okay, so maybe he hasn't joined us yet. Does anyone have a question for Dr. Uma? No? Well, that means that he's answering the questions in full. Okay. So, Dr. Uma, so what is the prognosis going forward for Biafra? Like, what is the vision and how realistic is the vision for the Biafra Nation.
Thank you, Queen. The diagnosis was performed right after the Europeans arrived in the west coast of Africa, especially when Britain received the share of that territory called, they finally called Nigeria. That was in the diagnosis. The empires that were already flourishing at that time, again, you name the Biafran Empire, the Oyo Empire, the Benin Empire, the Kanuri Empire. These were all empires. They were already in place before the arrival of the Europeans. So the Diagonoses were already there. And so because these people had the guns and the knives in their hands, people waited. They waited for opportunities to go back to the way things used to be. And then comes the expiration of the 100-year project called Nigeria. And people are saying, okay, look, you guys, you came, you colonized us, you stole our resources, even as you're still stealing our resources. You have done all those things. But as of today, we have none known any peace. There's still killings going on among ourselves because we are still incompatible nations that were forced together by you. Since the experiment has expired, why don't you let the people go separate, peacefully? So the prognosis at this time is separation, peaceful separation to all these different ethnicities that were forced together by the colonial masters. That's what we need to happen, to see happen. And this is where we are calling on the global people to rise and listen to our story. This is where we need to go to the United Nations and say, hey, look, enough is enough. If you really have the ball, why don't do something before we have another Rwanda or another many of the atrocities that thousands and thousands of people were killed when the United Nations looked the other way. Why do we have to wait until the actual killings start before we can react? This is the time to be proactive in terms of saying, look, we need you guys to conduct a referendum. And in the case of Biafra, a plebiscite, whereby let the people, since this experiment called Nigeria has already expired 8 years ago, how about a referendum for the people to determine where they want to be? If any of these ethnicities, if 2, 3, 4, 5 of the ethnicity, or even more, say, oh, look, we want to remain in Nigeria and still be called Nigeria. So be it. That is their right. But then again, if any ethnicity say, no, we've had enough, we want our own homeland, we want our own independence, what is wrong with that? We need United Nations. We need the Congress of America. We need the White House to be proactive, because like I said before, the time is taking. These Fulani people, backed by the Islamic world, they have infiltrated into the forest of Biafra land, not only in Biafra land now, even in the Yoruba land. Yoruba land is found on the west coast of the country. They have infiltrated, and they have reasoned that they want to kill off everyone so that they will become the permanent owners of these areas. But here's the funny thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, here's the funny thing. The least ethnicity to arrive in an enclave that is called Nigeria today are the Fulani people. They arrived in Nigeria just barely 200 years ago. Unlike the other more than 250 ethnicities that have been there for thousands of years. But then, do you blame them because they have their backers? Britain is rightly backing them to take this journey, while Britain is interested in what they can get in terms of resources and nothing else. So we need the United Nations to step in and separate these people peacefully, so that there will not be major war where millions of people will be killed again. Thank you, Queen.
Well, I just wanted to acknowledge it and support what you're saying, because 2 years ago, I think it was on October the 11th, the National Geographic Society actually interviewed someone who studied the culture of the colonizers. And this is what he had to say. He said that the majority did not want peace and harmony between the cultures. They wanted the land for themselves. They did not want to share the abundant resources. They wanted to generate wealth to fill their own pockets. Most had no respect for indigenous cultures or histories. They wanted to instead enforce their own. And I think that hearing your story in Biafra, it is identical to our story. And I'm going to get off course for a minute, and this is just for my own curiosity, y'all, so just bear with me. But it's about all of us, because I think that some people are real fickle about asking African people about slavery. And I'm going to ask you, Dr. Uma, about the African slave trade that took place, you know, here in America. And no one understands that. I'm speaking for myself and a whole lot of other people. No one understands how the African government or the African empires at that time orchestrated the slave trade. And during our tenure, if you would, of servitude in this country, I want to know personally why no one from Africa came for us.
Okay. Thank you very much, Queen. Wow. Let me start by saying that the connection that I know about the slavery here in the United States that is connected to our people is what they call the Igbo landing. The Igbo landing,
right,
in Georgia, Georgia and Carolina.
And that's where my grandmother came through, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Okay. Do you belong to the Gula Geechee people? Do you belong to that?
I am Gula Geechee. Yes.
Okay.
My mother is Gula Geechee.
Beautiful. Now let me just quickly let the audience know about this. First of all, back in Africa in those days, the days of slavery, there was nothing like slave trade. The word slave trade is what happened here in the American shores and in the European shores. In Africa, it was nothing but the capture of human beings and buckling them into a big ship and taking them away. During midnight. That's all it is. A lot of them were taken by force. Of course, you're not going to say 100% of all the people, the millions of people taken from Africa were all free taken by force. Let me also submit to you, and I think you need to do your research on this. Our people have been enslaved for 7 good times. The last time was just about 400 years ago. And that 400 years ago is what you guys called slave trade. Even though, once again, there was nothing like slave trade, the way they were captured from the African villages. And so let's fast forward to the Igbo landing thing. Well, the Igbo landing history is a remarkable, really remarkable one that shows the real characteristic of the Igbo people. Freedom. Freedom. They love freedom. The Igbo people love freedom and will not tolerate enslavement of any kind by anybody. You may trace this resistance once again to slavery back at the Siege of Masada. I don't know if you're familiar with the Siege of Masada. And that was back in 70 AD. As a last stand against the Roman exploitation in Judea. Once again, we're talking about exploitation. The Romans did it a long time ago, and the Hebrew people stood up to them. And so once again, in 1803, and as part of the ongoing capturing of Africans to slavery, a ship called Wanda tricked many Igbo natives to an adventure into the sea. However, deep in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, these natives were suddenly stripped of their clothing and put in chains. Now, let's just cut the long story short. On arrival to St. Simon's Island near Dunbar Creek in Georgia, these Igbo natives refused to submit to slavery and rather marched into the sea for mass suicide. Again, I said it happened in Masada. Now it happened again in St. Simon's Island. The remembrance of that event was in 2002 by the Ekwenche organization. Ekwenche organization at that time was a Biafran group. Also, in 2003, there was a repeat of a similar event at Charleston, South Carolina, also by Ekwenche organization and Biafra Foundation. Yours truly was there to join our people, the Gula Guchi people, to celebrate that event. Yes, I was there. And I'll give you a reference. If you go check out Psalm 93, verse 3 through 5. You'll see it reflect on the final prayers by these Igbo people before committing the mass suicide of marching into the sea. As a matter of fact, Beyonce, you know, Beyonce, the popular R&B singer, reflected on Igbo landing in one of our songs. I think it was in one of our songs and video. I think it was in 2016 or 2017. You can also play that video. I don't know the lyrics of that song, but it, again, it was all about this Igbo landing. Excuse me. Yes, slavery happened. In Africa, it was not called slavery. It was just called the capturing of natives and sending them out to the sea. Many of them didn't even know why they were captured. Many of them didn't even know where they were being taken. But on the arrival of the Eastern, the European shores and the American shores, that's when the thing you call slave trade today happened. That's when these human beings were literally auctioned off for sale by the people. Thank you.
Okay, that's a hard pill to swallow. Okay, I want to give the listening audience a chance. There's a lot of people online, and I don't know if Senator Gaston has joined us. But please, if you have a question for Dr. Uma, go ahead and press 1 on your dial pad, and we will happily take your question. And everybody's mic is live. So if you have a question for Dr. Huma, go ahead. No one? That is so odd. Dr. Uma, I guess you're just giving out direct information.
I'm glad to. And I submit to you that so many people, it's really unfortunate, so many people don't really know the history of what transpired in Africa. So sad. So sad.
I mean, we don't know the history, but also we don't understand why there was not a protest against the Americans enslaving us at that time. And I want to tell you this because you being a native, you know, full blood, I'm going to tell you that when I first talked to my cousin in Kazarani, which is the land of Grandfather Cain, he told me that a lot of the natives in the African country look at us as some what we would call half-breeds, or he explained it better that our DNA has been compromised. So our originality has been compromised by not only the invasion of slavery into our societies in Africa and removing us from our land, our culture, our language, but also the female bodies have been compromised. So when you have a Portugal or a Frenchman or a European from Switzerland or Greek or whatever invade the body of a woman and produce life, then that was the change of the lineage because now we were no longer African. One of the reasons that my grandfather married my grandmother was because she was so-called purebred, right? And these were slaves that were captured late in the slave trade. My grandfather wasn't captured to 1860. My grandmother was captured some years before him. But there is an invasion in us where some of the natives of Africa don't look at us as Africans. And so there's a culture where we call ourselves black, not identifying with Africa. So I just wanted to explain that and just share with people because it's very rare that we have someone that is a native. And I don't want to get off a tough topic of economic and social justice. We talked about the Just Third Way. We talked about the fact that the Biafra people already have their land. So the citizen land citizen land development cooperative is something that is, I think, very feasible in the country of Biafra where the citizens are assured of their territory, of their land, whereas here, just having the land to be able to manufacture and produce and be creative and, you know, get into agriculture, that is something that we don't have here. So as much as we are about economic justice, we're also about social justice. And I think the social justice issue in Biafra is critical because, like you said, these were tribes that were forced to live, you know, with one another. In the Holy Quran, in the Muslim faith, it says that Allah made you in tribes for you to know each other. But when he said, I made you in tribes, tribes is a certain group of people, a certain kind of people that have a particular culture and a particular way of life. And a particular way of life is to be respected across the board by everybody. And the fact that you all are at war with someone who looks like you is very tragic, and we are at war here. We're at war economically with a country that has not open their eyes or ears to a new economic paradigm that will serve all races, ethnicities here in this country. So since you are here, Dr. Uma, are, how many people, are, is there a neighborhood or community or a nation of people from Biafra in America?
Okay. Thank you, Queen. Let me start by disagreeing with what you were told. And this is the reason why. You see, all over the world, the DNA of humankind have all been mixed up. It's nothing like a pure race. You remember who tried with the Aryan Nation stuff to separate the race that he thought was a clean, unique, separate race. That was Hitler. And you know how it ended. So everybody has, DNA has been compromised. So you hardly see any pure DNA attributed to anyone. And here's another reason to back what I've just said up. Why? We thank God they have what they call ancestry DNA. For anyone that has taken that test, realize it's going to give you a breakdown of what that test says that where you come from. No test is going to, maybe for me, it would say maybe 100% African, 100% Biafran or what. But majority of the people are not going to get 100% black ethnicity with a DNA test. It's impossible. Everybody is a product of, little product from everywhere else. Even white people. I have my friends, white people, when they do their DNA, they have traces of coming from Africa. And of course we know through research and everything that we know today that all humankind actually came from Africa. So
that's
there is
right.
No pure blood except where you live and call yourself. You can go to Ghana today and introduce yourself as a Ghanaian and you'll be accepted. We have a lot of people who went through their DNAs and were told the particular region of Africa where the ancestors came from. They have gone back there to reestablish themselves. It's going on in Ghana. It's going on in many African countries today. So anyone telling you you're not pure because your DNA have been compromised a long time, is just trying to make a story for themselves. It's not trying to make a story for themselves. That is not possible. Matter of fact, we have Dr. Na here, Dr. Carolina. I have urged Dr. Na because I'm telling you with the characteristics of this hurricane of a lady, I have strongly advised her to go take a DNA ancestry test because Dr. Na exhibits the characteristics of an Igbo woman. Fearless.
She does. Yes,
really?
She does.
To do things. That is the characteristic of an Igbo woman.
Yes.
So if she takes her test now today and say, guess what, Dr. Uma? They say I'm from Nigeria. And I will be laughing and say, I told you. And I will ask her what part of Nigeria they say I'm from Igbo. I will be laughing at her.
Yeah.
So there's nothing like anybody telling you because of so many mixing of blood. There's nobody's pure.
Yeah, I know, because I'm like Igbo
and
Masa, you know.
From the continent.
I mean, and then the culture is mixed because, like I say, I'm Masa on my father's side and then Igbo on my mother's side. So, yeah, we all
mixed.
Everybody's in Africa,
mixed.
Even. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you cannot tell me because I'm not pure, I should not belong. You know, that's impossible. Matter of fact, let me tell you, some people who came back who took their DNA test and came back were treated as queens and kings that they are. Because guess what? Even in those days during the slavery time, kings and queens, princes and princes, many of them were taken into slavery because of conflicts in the family or because of conflicts between or among smaller ethnicities in the area. There were many reasons where people were taken into slavery. Like I said, it was not 100% forceful accusation of everyone. There were other factors that led to people being taken as slavery. So once again, there's nothing like pure blood. Maybe if I take, since I came directly from the Hebrew nation of Biafra, maybe if I take a DNA test, it will specifically tell me I'm from that area. You know, but you cannot use that as a measurement or a yardstick to somebody who was not born there, but who has the DNA attributed to him originally from coming from my place. Thank you.
I just have one question for Dr. Uma. This is Carolyn. No, I have a question. I need
yes,
you to
ma'am.
Give me that psalm that you quoted from the book of Psalms. What was it?
As you was
explaining something, you
Psalm
quoted. Psalm 93, verse what?
3 to 5.
Okay, that's all.
Uh-huh.
I just want to go back.
And now, if you also want to know where the evil people, their relationship being the Hebrew people, go to Numbers. Should be Numbers 26. Numbers 26.
Okay.
And let me see. You go to Numbers 26. I think it should be from verse 15. I think 15 to 19 or 15 to 18. Let me go right there because I need to.
Okay.
Yes. Numbers 26. Read.
Okay, I got it.
Read from
verse
15 to 18.
Okay, I got it.
There you will see the many sons of many
Jacob.
Sons of
Jacob.
Of course, we know the 12 sons. This is specific with God. God was the seventh son of Jacob, the seventh son. And God also has his own sons, including Zephon, Haggai, Shuni, Ozni, Eri, Arod, and Ereli. Now, Ozni, Eri, Arod, and Ereli are the Biafran people today.
That's the original Hebrews.
The original Hebrews, yes.
Okay.
All
right, thank you.
Okay,
wow.
This has quickly turned into a history lesson, of course. But I want to see if Brother has anything he wants to say. I think Brother Vernon is with us. I'm going to start calling y'all out since y'all want to be quiet. And there's somebody else from the Washington, D.C. area on the line. Anybody have any questions or comments about anything they've heard today?
Yes, this is Brother Vernon. I just wanted to say thank you because, honestly, you know, a moment of transparency here. Until today, until this broadcast, I did not know about Biafra or the Biafran people. And I have many friends who are Nigerian, but the idea that before the Berlin Conference, Nigeria as we know it today didn't exist, that's new to me. So I just learned something new. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate you.
Yes,
and
once again,
everything that I said today is on Google. You can Google them. You can Google Igbo landing. You can Google Biafra in the 16th century, before the arrival of the Europeans. You can Google anything and read all these things from Google. Thank you.
Let me ask you a question, Dr.
Yes,
With all that you've said and what Queen was talking about, the narrative, about our DNA being compromised. But as you said, you know, nobody can compromise the moral vein that's within us as a people. That you can't kill that, you can't compromise that. But how does we have to do something. I mean, we're in serious trouble here in America and throughout the world. As the darker people of the earth, we're in trouble. How can we, I know through education, we have to be educated, you know, it takes education. And what we are trying to do, DAS for ESJ and CSJ, along with the African government who are in exile, how can we and can't we have to come together and really, you know, act as one, you know, with one common objective and one common goal. And we, descendants of American slaves, it began for us to connect with the motherland and our brothers and sisters there. But, you know, what Queen was describing and all the things with the divisiveness and Biafran and quote unquote Nigeria, that is all a sign of fractions, you know, just fractions. And God does not deal with fractions. He finds the least common denominator and bring it up to a whole number. And that's what we've got to do. I mean, we've got an idea and a concept that is sound. It will work. It has already worked. So this is not just a new idea. This has been done with Louis Kelso and Norm Curlin, but it was done, as I said earlier, on the employee fund. So how can we work together, you know, as you said, you're peaceful power. That's what we have to do, peaceful power. And these are not what you described that's happening with over there in Biafran and Biafran. Before there was a Nigeria, there was a Biafran. I mean, that's a strong case, you know. That's a very strong case. And before a lot of this that we see in America and throughout the world, we were here. We were before there was an Africa or Jordan or Egypt, or those are names, you know, or America. We were here, so we have a legitimate case. That's not to be, especially when you meet, you say the United Nations, and then you go back and look at the Declaration of Human Rights that was written by the United Nations, Article 17, that everyone has a right to own property by themselves and in association with others. But here's the problem, is that we as a people refuse to demand that and hold them accountable for what they have written. Nobody is bringing it to their attention. So as long as we stay asleep and not bring it to the attention, then we will remain in the condition that we're in. So what I'm saying is that we all have a legitimate case.
Yes.
Our take on reparation, you can't put a dollar amount on the atrocity that was done to the enslaved people here in America. There is no dollar amount that you can put on that. The lynching, the burning, the redlining, Jim Crow law, you can't put a dollar value on that. So what we're asking is to repair the system.
Mm-hmm.
First, that's the first thing you have to do, is repair the system. To give each and everybody an opportunity to have equal access to capital ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And what the people have to understand, Dr. Umar, is that when you start to look at the root cause, we have to stop looking at the effects of poverty and go to the root of poverty, the root
yes.
of racism, the root of it all. And we have to go to the root of it all, and we all have to, it's about economics, but you have to start at looking at capital. Capital mm-hmm. ownership. Why should the top 1% own 98% of all the capital? That doesn't make sense. But my point being is we have a legitimate case, listening audience. We're not asking for a handout. We have
mm-hmm.
a legitimate case. And all it's going to take is, as he said, people power coming together. See, the problem
yeah.
with us here is that we don't make no demands.
Mm-hmm.
We go cast our vote, put them in office, and go home and sit on our hands.
Yeah.
We have got to start making a demand. And I strongly believe with everything that's in me, we have a legitimate case.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that what Gene is saying is that not only us as darker people of the world have a legitimate case, but, I mean, of America have a legitimate case, but I think this is a global issue because it
yes.
seems as though historically that the people that implement the policy that make these things so are the ones that are not being held accountable, are the ones that are not getting a demand from us. So
mm-hmm.
when you combine the native people of the darker countries and continents, then you would see that we have not only a case, but that we are the majority and that the policies that are in the hands of the powers that be must change in order
mm-hmm.
for us to be able to thrive in this country, on this land, in this world, because that is our God-given right. God did not write the Bible for us to be
mm-hmm.
separated from our people. So if it is so that we are to live in tribes, then where and when and how will we ever obtain territory if the policies that are in place prevent that from happening? And the only way that it will ever happen is that we have to band together to make a demand, because the time for justice is always right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we've
wow.
waited 400 plus years. The African
yeah.
people have been under the rule of the British compound, European compound, for hundreds of years. And so I'm saying that how do we as a people say, our people in Biafra, our people in Ethiopia, our people in the Sudan, our people who are in Kenya, our people who are in Tanzania, our people who are in America, our people who are in South America, when do we stand and make a demand on policies that affect our lives and not run away from people who say they are in power? They are in power by our vote, and we have
and
to
the
hold
most
them accountable.
And the most powerful thing about our message is that it's a universal message. You know, the preamble of the Constitution first says is to establish justice. And just look at the symbol of justice. It is a balanced scale. Right now, the scale is not balanced. So what
yeah.
we have to do is demand. All we're asking for is justice. You mentioned the Bible. That's all Deuteronomy. Justice, 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 thou shalt pursue. But we have to get out of the mindset that when we mention justice, it's not just talking about the rule of law. is to establish justice, and that's all we're pretty much asking, is to establish justice, justice within the economic system. And another thing I want to point out, you mentioned British rule and pretty much the creation of Nigeria and an expired, well, American law, American's common law is exact as the British law. So little do we know it, here in America, we're operating under the British law because it's the same. It is exactly the same. So when Clean talk about, you know, how institutions that make up the social order, they have to become institutions of change. I mean, but how would they do that? I mean, a lot of them, you know, and I've witnessed this, and it makes me want to go up. Because I see leaders and politicians, they're afraid to go against the grain. They're afraid, yeah. They talk in their campaign that they're going to, you know, do away with the status quo. But when they get in there, they go along to get along. Yeah. I think most of these politicians, all they want is a damn job. Excuse my expression. You know, right. They just poor, ragged, hungry, and naked and out of doors than any of us. And I think a lot of them are there for a paycheck. And they do that because we do not make demands and come. The good thing about CESJ and DOCSESJ is that we come with a solution to the problem. I am so sick of hearing rhetoric within. I live in St. Louis, Missouri. That is one of the most dangerous cities in America besides Louisville, Kentucky. I think Louisville is number one. But, you know, it's the worst city in the world. I mean, and you look at it, and you have to sit back and ask the question, why is it in the position that it's in? It's because the people won't stand. The people will not stand up. You know, all it takes is people power for us to stand up and make demands. We're coming with a solid, sound solution that will end poverty, racism, and conflict. I mean, that's what we're coming with, and I close with that.
Gene, I'd like to, if I can just ask you, if you could describe the Economic Democracy Act. Because if we're talking about making everyone have the power of ownership and the rights of ownership, the rights to the fruits and the rights to participate and control over things that are productive, tell me, describe what the Economic Democracy Act would do to empower every child from the time of birth to the time of death, every man, every woman, equally, in terms of what does it take, the specific changes in the Economic Democracy Act. Could you describe it?
Yeah, I'll do the best I can. And the best way I can describe the Economic Democracy Act, also known as the Capital Homestead Act. And that Capital Homestead Act came from the Homestead Act of 1862. When Abe Lincoln passed the Homestead Act, he gave 10% of America's land to those, I want to say white settlers, but I want the listening audience to know that was also offered to freed slaves and immigrants who wanted to become residents or citizens of America. So in 1862, he passed what was called the Economic Democracy, I mean the Homestead Act in 1862. Where he gave all these millions of acres of land, usually 160 acres per family, to go west of the Mississippi and start the agriculture revolution. Well, that was in the land frontier. And believe it or not, today, many inherit those lands and they're the beneficiaries of that Homestead Act. But my point being, that was during the land frontier. In 1862, land was where it was, you know. language where it was. So today there's a new frontier that nobody is paying attention to. Nobody is talking about it but DOS, VESJ, and CSJ. It is and it's infinite. It is the artificial intelligence, the new advanced technologies, the robotics that's replacing human labor. So we called it, Norm Curling came up with the Capital Homestead Act, because that, what I just explained to you or shared with you, is a form of capital. So he came up with the Capital Homestead Act. So the same thing that Abe Lincoln did in 1862 under the Homestead Act, we're asking them to do it under the Capital Homestead Act, now known as the Economic Democracy Act. Do it in for capital, robotics, artificial intelligence, and advanced technologies. Why does the top 1% own all of it? And so how it works is that each person, each man, woman, and child from the time of birth will, let's say, $11,000 or $12,000 a year allotment from their commercial banks through the Federal Reserve. Now, the Federal Reserve and the central banking system has the powers to do this. They can fail to create money for private sector growth by bills of exchange. Now, bills of exchange just means a promissory to pay. So it shouldn't be based on past savings. I mean, a lot of us would like to, you know, become capital owners, buy on Wall Street, which you really, once we educate you on Wall Street, you'll change your mind there. But it can't be based on past savings, and it doesn't have to be based on past savings. It can be paid by future profits. Just to give you an example, a child born today with $11,000 capital allotment or a capital homestead account could get $11,000 a year allotment. That's not for consumer purchases or nothing like that. It's strictly to go into productive capital assets to buy. By the time that child reaches age 18, that child will have over $18,000. Now get this, $18,000 in dividend income. Dividend income. Now, 18-year-old having $18,000 a year coming in the income from the capital estate, they can pay for their own college education. No need for college debt. By the time that same child reaches age 65, they have over $88,000 in capital income coming in. No need for Social Security, food stamps, welfare. That reduces national debt, it begins to reduce the use of government, even. It reduces the use of government because 65% of the taxation that goes into government, over 65 to 70%, goes to welfare subsidies. So if you find ways to reduce welfare subsidies, you reduce the use of government. And that's under the Economic Democracy Act. It allows and gives everybody an opportunity to participate in the wealth that is being generated within the country and the world, and ultimately throughout the world. Now, what we just did here in Missouri with the Citizen Land Development Co-op, which is just a component of the Economic Democracy Act, more on a local and state level, we can take impoverished communities. It can be urban or rural areas. And we're, in layman's terms, and keep it simple, turning permanent residents into landlords. They'll get dividend payouts from land leases, try to attract corporations back into the community. And we have to find, this is a way that we can begin to build self-sustaining, thriving, and just communities. I mean, this is the way to do it. And, you know, with the development that goes on in our communities today, there's three questions I want the listening audience to begin to ask. Who owns it? Who controls it? Who pays for it? You know, gentrification is on the rise. the Citizen Land Development Co-op. That's a way to begin gentrification, and it's a way to begin strengthening the cooperative movement. And cooperatives just mean, as I said earlier in my presentation, collectively coming together. That's all it is, cooperative, and it will strengthen the cooperative movement. And as I say, and this is just me talking, you know, I haven't seen anything else out there like that.
Thank now, that passed in Missouri already, right?
Yes, the law has passed in Missouri, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get it passed in Connecticut?
It can be replicated in other states, and all we have to do to, you have to introduce it to one of the legislators there, you know, or a senator, and then get it brought before the lawmakers there in Connecticut, get a vote on it, and help, and hope that it, you know, goes into law. You know, that's pretty much
If you can help me out with that, I think I'd like to introduce that into Connecticut to the assembly, general assembly here.
Yeah, but let me also add that, and I don't mean to touch bases on a negative note, but it's not worth the paper it's written on. It has to be brought into action. And the only way that it can be brought into action is that the people, the community, be educated on it and see that this is the first time in history where they can become an owner and have an equal voting share opportunity to become owners and become real landlords of the land. That it reminds me, right down the street from where I live, you know, a gentleman came in and bought a lot of property, and he bought a grocery store, huge, beautiful grocery store. And today that grocery store is empty, beautiful, brand new. It's being leased. He leased it out to a private investor, and the private investor can't stock the shelves and nothing like that, so the doors stay closed more than it's open. And across the street, see, when I go in places of business, I ask a lot of questions. He built a new fuel gas station across the street, and I was talking to who I thought was the owner. I know who the owner is now, but he told me the proprietor of the business said, I leased the building from Paul McGee. Paul McGee. I was like, Now just think, if the citizens own that land that building is on, then the sole proprietor would be leasing that space from the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be leasing it from the citizens, the guy who's got the grocery store. You know, I just envision it can be a cooperative grocery store, set us as a cooperative business where everybody that works in there works in it, and the community owns an equal share of whatever the profit is that comes from that grocery store. That eliminates what we call what I'm just calling stealing and robbing. When somebody owns, have an equal share right, that begins to put an end to all of what we see that's plaguing our communities, because even police departments, you know, if they know that they have an equal voting share of the community that they are hired to protect and serve, they're going to protect it better. They're going to, you know, serve it better. They're going to build relationship with the citizens, and everybody is, as an owner. That's how you build sustainable, safe communities. Giving people ownership to the communities, that's how you build it. And this is, and I'm going to say this in closing because I don't want Queen to go over time, but I have not yet seen anything out there like it. Then again, one that even began to touch this vehicle, because it's not dependent on past savings. It don't depend on, that's how the wealth of America is being concentrated, because they can self-finance, they can self-insure. They got the money to do so, but that's why the wealth is being concentrated. And what the central banking system and the Federal Reserve Bank is doing is that they're printing money out of thin air, which is legal counterfeiting, I don't know. I don't care how you try to dice it and slice it. Let you and I go start printing money in our basement and put it out here in this in circulation. Well, we would go to jail for it.
You'll be on the show, American Greed.
Yeah, we will go to jail for it. But you're saying that we'll go to jail for the citizens, but it's okay for government to counterfeit money? We can't do it, but governments can do it. So, you know, as I said, this is the greatest vehicle that I've ever seen. I haven't seen anything to touch it because you don't have to make an investment in terms of dollars. It's not dependent on past savings. The Federal Reserve has the power to create the money. So, Norm, I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, but not only, I do think you're right, that it's the money system that has to be changed. That's the most important. But at the same time, you also have to change the tax system to encourage universal equal access to future ownership. It's a tax system, too. You want to make sure that corporations do pay out 100% of their profits to the owners. And you also want to make sure this is a way corporations could escape from taxes if they pay it all, if they pay out all their profits to the owners, to the particularly the new owners under what you described in the way the money system and the bank or the local banking system would operate to provide loans to every child, woman, and man. In a way in which they would, there would be no interest. It'd be a small charge just to cover insurance. But,
but other than that,
all of it would go into buying up those every year's new shares, growth shares, high technology growth shares, so that every citizen would begin to become economically independent of other citizens and economically independent of government. Government would become dependent on the people, and it would be more than just having the vote, because now you would have citizens who would control the economic system.
Yes, you're right. You know, and what Norm's talking about for is the inheritance tax and the tax laws and things like that. You can learn more about that. I didn't want to go into the complexity of it all, but you can learn more about that on CESJ.org website and DOSBSJ website. But, you know, to go into all the technical details of it, you know, you also can sign up Justice University course. I think there's a course coming up real soon. But, you know, no matter how, you know, how all the technicalities that go in this, ladies and gentlemen, listening audience, this is so simple. It is simple. You know, it's so simple. It's just simple mathematics. That's all it is. It can be done. It can be done under existing laws. It can be done. You know, we just got to apply ourselves to become educated. Okay, Queen, you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. I'm just taking it all in, of course. And I don't know if Senator Gaston ever joined us. Is he on the line?
I don't think so. He was only going to have the first hour. He said that he would be available for the first hour, but I don't know that he did sign in. He may have been called away to something else, but he was interested.
Okay.
Whatever
you
understand.
Okay, well, we're down to the last minute, and Brother Vernon is always so good at giving us some marching orders. So, Brother Vernon, come on and give us some marching orders before we get out of here.
Marching
come on,
orders.
Soldiers.
education is the key. We learned a lot today, and there's so much more to learn. So be thirsty, be hungry. Like the brother said, go to Google, learn what you can about the connections that we have on the African continent, because this movement, Dr. ESJ, is about forming alliances, coalition building, finding kindred spirits and people who are on similar mission as we are. So touch base with as many people as you can and seek them out. Also, you know the deal. Go to the website, go to dodsportesj.org, and educate yourself. That's the marching order for the day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Vernon. All right. Dr. Uma, do you have some pearls of wisdom to give us before we leave?
Yes. Thank you, Queen. Once again, it's all about education. Education, education, education. There's so much that we don't know. I'm optimistic that through education, that alliance that we have been lacking over these years will eventually come into play. We need to really work together, black, white, yellow, brown, because when God created this universe, he selectively assigned certain resources to every corner of the earth. No one lacks anything. Even if you do, there is what with cooperative advantage, meaning I give you what you want and I get what I need from you. It's very easy. It's very easy to survive in this world if people, humankind, can actually work together. Again, this is going to be through education. And I thank you guys for the opportunity afforded me to join you guys tonight. Thank you.
And I hope that you will join us again sometime in the near future. Okay.
Not a problem.
Well, since I'm... Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything that you've taught us today and all the information that you've given today to move forward and be proactive in this mission. And since Dr. Curlin is here with us, Dr. Curlin, you have any marching orders for us?
No, I like what the gentleman that you asked him to give you the marching order. I like what he just said. The most important thing is learning how to form alliances and build coalition building. It's very important. Together we stand, divided we fall. And we
there
must learn to come together. As I said, I said to Dr. Uma's group last Saturday, we may not have it all together, but together we can have it all.
Amen.
Right. Come on
Amen.
Now. Come on now. I
where
like that.
Queen,
you missed that, though. You missed that, Queen.
Oh, yes.
I said, like I said to Dr. Uma's group last Saturday, there's power in one. When you come together, you're one. I said, we may not have it all together, but together we can have it all.
Right.
Come on
and
now.
And the Just
There's
Third
power
Way.
Unity.
Yeah, the Just Third Way will solve not just poverty, it will also solve racism, and it will solve war. Because when every citizen of the world begins to hear what Biafra is trying to do and what we're trying to do in this country, in every country in the world, there will be no war. There's no point in having war when you have freedom and power to every person.
Yes, I agree with you.
Okay. Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us today. I have been enlightened and informed, and I appreciate each of you for all of your input. And again, we must get together and share and exchange wisdom. And also with the listening audience, I want to thank everybody who's listening online. And there's a couple of people in the chat room. I appreciate all of you, and I pray that we have given you something and encouraged you to go out and be proactive. If you don't want to join dots4esj.org, that's where you can get the information for Dots for Economic and Social join an organization that is about economic and social justice, because that is the only way that we are going to survive. My marching orders is learn the policy that govern this land. You have been so divided by politics. You're African American, you're a Democrat, you are Caucasian, and you are a Republican. We have to stop that, because it's the policies that's killing us. So there are some good policies that